From a dot in the middle of the map, this is Midwesternish. I'm Gina Kaufman.
There was a pool of water. You could see from every floor. There was a large, like, what's that called? A skylight? So there was this beam of light in the center of the mall, and massive balloons, hot air-sized balloons, were floating down from the ceiling, up and down, at odd intervals.
That's Andrea Tudhope, one of our producers. She used to go to Metro North Mall with her grandparents, and the balloons were her favorite part.
I remember part of the surprise to me was never knowing when, which one was going to go up when it went up, and we could sit for hours just watching these balloons. It was the main attraction of the mall for me.
Now, photographs by Seth Lawless show what the mall looks like now that it's been closed for 2 years. There's a bleak desolation to every shot.
It's super weird. I mean, I went there all the time, and seeing these images is just, I never expected to see what it would look like once it was gone. And I don't recognize it.
On this episode, the fall of the Great American Shopping Center. Suburban malls used to be cool places to hang out. Now they've gone beyond just losing their cachet. They're shuttering their doors and waiting for the wrecking ball. But what are they like inside now that everyone's gone home?
Reflected in the windows of the suburban shopping centers where they go to buy.
With the suburban boom of the 1950s, consumers were looking to avoid trips downtown to individual stores where parking was becoming difficult. So Austrian-born architect Victor Gruen designed a building to solve those problems. He set his first design here in Edina, Minnesota, a suburb of Minneapolis, and called it Southdale.
Pants and burgers. Yeah, lots of space in this mall.
What's the matter? You look depressed.
I hate working the theater. All the action's on the other side of the mall.
Being at Old Orchard Mall kind of reminded me of being home in Africa, by the watering hole, and the animals are in heat.
These are the ruins of a dying culture. The American Shopping Mall.
The remains of rolling acres in Akron, Ohio. Poster child for a recent phenomenon in America, the dead mall.
Renegade photographer Seth Lawless has been spending a lot of time in abandoned malls, walking through the wreckage with his camera. The photographs he takes are part of a collection called Autopsy of America.
It started about 10 years ago. And with the goal in mind to show a vulnerable side of my country to the world.
Fancy glass elevators shattered to smithereens, dead plants toppled over on their sides, broken tiles on the ceilings and the floors, and telephone cords dangling ominously from their obsolete booths.
When people were seeing my images on Instagram in parts of Russia and Asia, Australia, Brazil, they couldn't believe what they were seeing. They were like, oh, this isn't America. That's a third world country. And that's exactly the response I wanted to get.
Why?
I wanted to show my country in a vulnerable state because I think it's the reality of it. I was kind of sick and tired of seeing the beautiful skylines of New York and Seattle. And I felt as though my country was hiding the sections that they thought were ugly, expendable. And the more time I spent there, I mean, there were still people that were living amongst the ruins. And they were some of the most poor and broken and disenfranchised Americans in the country. And it bothered me to see the fact that we weren't addressing some of the issues that they were facing. We weren't even looking at it. And the response of a lot of Americans early on in my work was like, oh, that can't be Americans. That can't be America. That's a third world country. So they had the same response as some of the people globally that were following me on my social media platforms. And then I knew there was a much deeper divide, a much a bigger disconnection between Americans and the reality that surrounds us. And that's when I knew kind of we were in serious trouble.
Considering that Seth is kind of an abandoned mall connoisseur, it's saying a lot that the creepiest mall he has ever seen is Metro North.
I was in Kansas City on another project I was doing for the Huffington Post. It was documenting the most toxic city in America, which is in Pitcher, Oklahoma. It's an old mining town. It's about a couple hours south of Kansas City. It's a straight shot to go down to Pitcher. So I was flying into Kansas City. It just so happens the hotel I was staying at the last visit was near this mall, and someone at the hotel had mentioned it to me, and I went right over. I went there not expecting, really not knowing what to expect. Was it there? Could I access it? And I just see the mall, and I see what looks like big, large open areas where you could just walk right into the mall, and it has like these big plywood, doors, but they're open. And I walk in, I immediately smell the mall, and every abandoned mall has the same smell, and it's a combination of like mold and just mildew, I think. But to me, it's just, I go, oh man, this is an abandoned mall. This is going to be good. So I walk in and I shoot the entire mall.
You know, Seth, one of the most bizarre scenes you capture, at least in my opinion, is what looks like a deconstructed escalator with that weird rubber railing stuff that's on all escalators kind of twisted and falling down the stairs. And I understand the basic concept of entropy, like that without maintenance, if you don't put energy into something, it falls apart and naturally spirals into a state of disorder, but I cannot figure out why an escalator would come apart. It looks violent.
Yeah, you know, that's something that's come up in some recent interviews that I've done. And I gotta be honest, I mean, I've shot things in Europe and other parts of the world, and I've never seen more just senseless destruction and vandalism and just overall violence than I do in American abandoned ruins. And I don't know what that is. It must be in our culture and our DNA, unfortunately, but it's just amazing to see the amount of damage. And of course, that is clearly indicated through just straight vandalism, senseless vandalism. Now, there's other times where scrappers go in. I shot another abandoned mall near Chicago. The police there had told me that there was a lot of people going in there scrapping. And that was a problem too. So you have that more so in America too, where scrapping is a way of life for some of these people that still live in these areas, unfortunately.
The small details in these photos that signal traces of a human presence are the most disturbing to me, like a Coke can on the ground or a sign that reads sale $29.99. I mean, seeing those things reminds you that people once did very normal things here, that it wasn't always like this. Do you deliberately seek out those little remnants?
Yeah, you know, over the years, absolutely. Anytime I release a project like this, especially abandoned malls, there's I'm inundated with emails, and they're beautiful, and I wish I could respond to everyone. But a lot of people that lived in Kansas City, some people that grew up in Kansas City and went to that mall, moved away, all wrote me with amazing stories. Yeah, there was one. It brought me to tears. And it was really long. And she went on to talk about how she used to watch these hot air balloons that would go up and down at this particular mall with her father and while her mother shopped. And it was, it was just an emotional testimony of how she bonded with her father over this time.
Our producer had a similar experience with her grandfather.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Amazing, right? And so you read these and you're just, wow, it's so nostalgic for people. So over the years, I've really kind of honed in on capturing those little things, like you said, those details. Not only the wide angle shots to bring in the size of the magnitude and the massive open abandoned space, but also to pull those, you know, those personal intimate things that people could relate to.
Seth's from the Rust Belt, so places in decline mean something personal to him.
I grew up in Cleveland. My father grew up very young in Detroit. He eventually got a job as a blue-collar steel manufacturer for Ford, the auto manufacturer. And of course, the Rust Belt region of the country was really affected. And of course, Detroit. And he eventually moved to Cleveland to work at Ford. He eventually retired. And so kind of through that, my dad's rise and demise of the Ford Motor Company, in a sense. It really kind of shed light on what was happening throughout the Rust Belt region. In cities like Detroit, Cleveland, Youngstown, Gary, Indiana. I mean, you talk about since World War II, we lost about 50% of our population. And it was directly related to globalization and outsourcing and manufacturing jobs. And, you know, to see that decline in my lifetime affected how I viewed things, and it kind of inspired me to want to help change that. You know, I want Americans to see what is happening from what is happening to their country from the comfort of their suburban homes and their smartphones. But more so in this particular project, and it's very unique. I mean, the reason malls don't exist anymore, they don't thrive and they become abandoned, varies greatly. For instance, you know, someone in Seattle the other day said, well, the abandoned mall in Cleveland closed down because of Amazon and online shopping. That's not necessarily true. If the abandoned mall in Seattle will close because of that, the abandoned mall in Cleveland is sitting in an area where if you go outside that mall, the strip mall is abandoned, the gas stations, the restaurants. You go a little bit farther into the neighborhoods, you have 5 abandoned homes and 1 occupied, then 4 abandoned homes and then 3 occupied. So that's the situation.
If you've driven around a declining suburb, you know what he's talking about. But how did we end up with this leak situation? Infrastructure and development reporter Steve Vakrat has some ideas. He works for the Kansas City Star.
Well, malls were a very popular attraction when they were starting to get built in the 70s and 80s. And part of it was for what your guest suggested, that they were kind of places people could meet. And they were different from a lot of, they were quite a bit different from the shopping options that they had at the time, where, you know, you could get all kinds of things all in one place. And a lot of them had these big department store retailers in them. I mean, Montgomery Ward was a popular one a long time ago. Sears was an element of some of these. And a lot of those, you know, a lot of those ventures aren't as commercially successful as they used to be. They're not really they're not really places people shop anymore. You know, I think the internet has played a fairly substantial role in, you know, the decline of the mall, because with the internet, you can go and you can research what you want to buy and make informed decisions ahead of time. Whereas the mall structure, you know, as your last guest suggested, it almost kind of lends itself to the window shopping idea. You know, maybe I want to go get a book at the bookstore in the mall, but I'm going to go see a shoe store on my way there and realize, well, you know, the heel's falling off of the shoes I got now. Why don't I just go in there and get those as well? And so, you know, the decline of the mall is really kind of emblematic of the shifts in consumer tastes and consumer preferences.
When these places sit abandoned, talk to me about what happens more generally to the communities that surround them. I mean, Seth Wallace has made the argument that these are the vulnerabilities of our country just on display. Do you see that bear out?
Yeah, and I see them kind of as a, you know, a vestige of a bygone era that you can still look at. I mean, it's kind of interesting in a way to be able to view something like Seth's photographs to sort of, it's kind of striking in a way, because like he said, they used to be gathering places. And if you go to some of the existing malls that are still around today, you know, you still see sort of that community gathering aspect, maybe not as much as you saw perhaps in the 80s, but, you know, people using it for exercise, you know, they walk around the mall. And, you know, and in terms of their broader effect on the community, it just kind of depends. But, you know, I look at the photos that he took and, you know, having been there, it's sort of and people have a nostalgia for malls, right? I mean, when they go down, it's sort of like kind of this odd event where you're seeing something that used to be so popular and, you know, and majestic in a certain way, just going by the wayside.
You're kind of seeing it. I don't know. You're seeing just the bare bones without everything that we as the public kind of added to it.
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, when you go into some of these malls, I mean, in their heyday, they were very active places. I mean, you know, you got the center aisle mall kiosk, people selling, you know, various items. You know, the corridors are packed. You got the movie theater. It's almost kind of like a little city. And so when that goes away, it's just sort of, it's kind of a striking thing to have to see when they eventually die.
I have personally witnessed the birth, life, and death of popular shopping malls in my lifetime. And I gotta say, the weirdest stage in the whole life cycle comes right before the end. As a reporter for a weekly paper in Kansas City, I went to a gun and knife show in what used to be a Montgomery ward. So people were, like, strolling around this mauve-carpeted place shopping for bullets. The rest of the mall was just barely hanging on. No heat, no AC, and the storefronts had been taken over by model train enthusiasts. Do I miss the glorious shopping malls of my youth? I'll be honest, I really don't. They were always non-places in a way, disposable. That's what I see in Seth's photos. But I did used to go to the mall with my friends Laura and Sally. We used to braid our hair together at sleepovers. One of us had brown hair, one black, one blonde. I miss them.
Abandoned malls have touched a lot of people's lives. Just the other day, someone wrote me, and it was a guy, and he really wanted this print, and a print of one of the images, and it wasn't one of my favorite images, to be honest. It was at Metro North Mall. It was a jewelry store. And I finally pressed him. I said, "Well, what do you like about this so much?" And he goes, "I bought my wife's wedding ring there." It's just like you get these emotional testimonies in these emails, and you just it's enough to make your heart feel like it's gonna cave in. It's really something.
But that is amazing that someone wants the photograph that captures it after it's kind of dead, like the place where he bought his wife's wedding ring, but he wants the photograph of it not in its heyday. I mean,
well, that's it though. I mean, I think it symbolizes when you see the abandoned mall images, and I think this is why people find it so captivating, is that they realize that that time and place in America is gone, and it probably will be gone forever, unfortunately, in a sense. If you agree that back then it was a little bit better, we communicated a little bit better, this was a little bit more of a thriving time in the 70s and 80s. And people that grew up at malls, like myself, these were great places to go. And you didn't have to have money to go. You went there after school. You met your friends there.
So wait, but can I just follow up on something? I mean, you said that this is something that's gone forever. I mean, specifically, this kind of mall, that's probably true, but the social function that it performed, you think that that's also gone with it, not thriving elsewhere?
No, absolutely. I think it's gone. I think that's what people really grasp with the photos. They're seeing the mall crumbling, and it's very indicative of how our culture had changed and how we communicate and how we live our lives now. Yeah, absolutely. I don't think you're never going to build an enclosed shopping mall and have people go there and meet people and talk to people. You won't have that. These areas thrived, and these were communal spaces because you didn't have social media. You couldn't call someone. You went there after school to meet your friends. That's how you communicated. That's where you met. You went to your arcades. You went to see movies. You walked around and you window shopped, and you might not have been able to afford anything, but it didn't matter. You know, people aren't going to do that anymore. Those days have long passed. And with that, people find that a little sad.
This episode of Midwesternish was produced by Matt Hodapp and Matthew Long Middleton. Sylvia Maria Gross is our editor. If you want to subscribe, you can do it on NPR One or just wherever you generally do that kind of thing. The stories come from a daily show on Kansas City's public radio station, KCUR 89.3. The show's called Central Standard. Head to kcur.org if you want to check it out. I'm Gina Kaufman. Catch you next time.